Year of the Pair Podcast with Leo Battari, Season 1, Episode 45. Hi, I'm Randy Cantrell. Welcome to the Year of the Pair Podcast with Leo Battari. This podcast is based on a simple truth. Who you surround yourself with matters. Author and keynote speaker Leo Battari will interview thought leaders from all walks of life who will share how they leverage peer advantage and show you how engaging your peers more purposefully can hold the key to greater success in business and in life. Today's guest is Richard Franzi. Richard is the founder and CEO of Critical Mass for Business, a premium social and peer learning organization for executives who lead firms with annual revenue up to $100 million. Richard's third book, Killing Cats Leads to Rats, Mitigating the Negative Effects of Unintended Consequences of Business Decisions, will be released in early 2018. He is a business partner with Renaissance Executive Forums, an international advisory board firm founded in 1994. Richard currently chairs CEO peer groups throughout Los Angeles and Orange County, California. You can learn more by going to criticalmassforbusiness.com. We welcome Richard to the show.
Richard Franzi, welcome to the program. I'll tell you, when we first came up with the idea of Year of the Peer podcast, late last year, coming into January, and of course, Randy Cantrell, a producer, was a huge, part of that. We talked about the list of people who we wanted to make sure, contributed their voice to this conversation, and you were certainly high on the list, and we're so thrilled that you're able to make time for us here, especially now that we're in the fourth quarter. We've had some incredible guests this year, and I know you have not only been in this space in terms of peer groups for a long time, but I really feel like you're launching a whole second wave of content right now that is really very exciting. And but I'd love for, people, of course, to get to know you. If you could tell us, a bit about, how you got involved, with CEO peer groups, and maybe who are some of the people who influenced you along the way. That'd sure. Just be a great place to start for our listeners.
Thank you. It's an honor to be on your show. I enjoyed having you on my show, and now it's great to be on your program. Congratulations. I've listened to a number of your episodes, and I really enjoy the quality of guests that you get, so it's great to be among those people.
There you go.
I've been in this space 10 years. I left my corporate job at the age of 49 because I had been in a peer group for a number of years when I was the president and general manager for a manufacturing company. It was Delphi Connection Systems, and I saw so much value in that experience. I'd always thought I would leave the corporate world, Leo, but I never, the more successful you get, they have family and commitment.
Sure.
It's hard to give that up.
And
it is. Scary. And it is. It's a big decision. But I felt so, I was in one of the meetings in Santa Barbara, and I was with Chief Executive Network, Bob Graybill's group, and he had a manufacturing group, and I was with them. And like a bolt of lightning, Leo, it hit me. I thought, I think I want to do more what Bob's doing at the front of the room than what I'm doing sitting here as a peer.
Yeah.
And I went home, and the first person I talked to was my wife, right? Is this a good idea? Is this a good time? I wasn't sure what she was going to say, but she said it makes perfect sense. I told my boss that I'm going to be leaving the company, and he asked me to stay around until they could find my replacement, which frankly gave me a couple months of, any new entrepreneur knows it takes way longer to get your business started than you think. And so having that ability to kind of do both jobs for a period of time did get some legs under me about 6 months, frankly, until they found my replacement as president. And then I went off full time since April of 2018. I've been doing this.
Wow. So what do you think, though, what were some of the influences that you think have occurred in your life that kind of drew you to this idea of you wanted to be at the front of the room and you wanted to be that person helping other people?
Having been the president at Delphi for a number of years, I was with Delphi for 7 years, I took the responsibility of making the decisions that impacted the lives of my employees really seriously. We had 700 employees and many with families and extended families. And so the weight of having to make the right decision because of the impact that downstream it might have on those employees, good or bad, really weighed on me. And what I realized from going to Bob's peer groups was that I wasn't alone. Other people felt the same way. They almost had many of the same issues. It's like, this is unbelievable, right? I had my MBA from Pepperdine, and I learned a lot of important information about how to run a business, but it was academic. This was practical, real-world, honest feedback from people that I became to know, like, and trust. And I realized that I could do more for other people by bringing people together. The pressure of always having to have the final answer is a heavy weight. And unless you've ever been the CEO, business owner, top executive, you really can't appreciate sometimes the weight of that.
Right.
One of my favorite books is called The President's Club. And it's about the how the presidents go around each other when the new president gets elected, because they realize there are very few people in the world who understand what they went through.
It's a small club.
It is. It's a very small club. And I thought, well, if the most powerful position in the world believes in peer learning, why wouldn't this also work for other business leaders? And so recently I came across a book that was very powerful influence in my life.
You might have heard of it. Yeah, I've heard
and
of
I,
it.
I highly recommend this, because as I read your book, and we talked about it on my radio show, there are so many universal truths in this book about how people can build an advantage by leveraging the knowledge of other people. It's like a superpower for the right leaders and CEOs, I think, Leo.
Well, obviously, and I'll just divert real quickly, because you brought it up, but I think one of the reasons that we had written it was, as you know, peer learning is incredibly powerful. And when you look at what it does for the people who engage informal peer groups, and then you look at how few people do it, it's very difficult to square that in my mind, right? So I think for all the work you do and any of us do, and I hope hundreds and thousands more, engage in this idea of promoting the fact that we should all be working together and depending on one another and leading on each other. And when we do, we are capable of doing some amazing things. So obviously my hope that there's a lot more of that. But hey, I want to fast forward a little bit to, so here you are, you have this conversation with your wife and she says, sure, okay, got it. It's a good idea. You seem passionate about it. It's something you want to do. So, that of course, I would imagine at least eventually became the, critical business network, critical mass for business, of course. And, you do a lot of work with CEOs and business owners and all. So tell us about how that evolved and what that looks like today.
So I looked at how would I deliver this service in my market, and I looked at Vistage, I looked at the Tab Group, I talked to Bob Grable about Chief Executive Network, and I came across an organization by the name of Renaissance Executive Forums. As luck would have it, Leo, my number two person that I relied on, she was my number one, but she was number two in the organization. Her husband ran a Renaissance Executive Forums group in the Inland Empire. His name is Ron Penland. And until I let her know what I was doing, she was in one of their key executive groups. She asked me if she could spend a half a day once a month. And I'm like, yeah, this is great. I'm doing it, on my group. You should go on yours. And I never really put the two things together until I started the deliberation on the different. And each one has its value for me, potentially. And each one has its value for members to join. And I think when people consider peer groups, they should look at a number of them and compare and contrast. I don't think that happens enough in our industry, frankly. To your point, I'm shocked at the level of penetration that we have in this industry, because I think many more people would benefit if they would just spend the time sharpening their saw. Find the right community. I was just at a SCORE breakfast this morning, and here in Orange County, SCORE has, I think, six CEO roundtables that they lead for early stage companies, and that's great because so many of those fail. So I think that's great. So I picked Renaissance Executive Forums because it was a franchise business that I could buy. So I own Orange County and a part of Renaissance. I wanted to be on my own, but I didn't want to be alone. And so joining a group like Vistage as a chair or Renaissance as a franchise owner seemed to me to be the right decision. And I'm celebrating 10 years with them, and it's been a great ride. I really do enjoy the community, because within the Renaissance community, we have our own peer group of franchise owners who get together on a quarterly basis and work through the common challenges that we face. We also have a couple business partners of Gazelles that are in the group with us as well. And I really love being around those guys, because Gazelles is such a rich organization with Vern Harnish and all the IP and the authors that they have. It just brings so much more knowledge to our personal peer group. And I think it helps my members here in Orange County.
Well, what's great about the work you do, though, is you are also such a student of this, you know, as well. And because you're such a student of it and you, I think, continue to learn all the time from it, you want to share that learning, and you do that beyond just sharing it with your members. And oftentimes, whether it's through your, you know, radio show or you know, other platforms for on which you write, obviously your first book is, we're about the 10-year mark or so from that first book, correct? So
yes.
Tell us a little bit about that first book. What, you know, what inspired that? And then what inspired the second book pretty much shortly thereafter?
So if you're, I don't, maybe there'll be a business owner or a CEO who listens or watches this podcast and considers joining a Vistage group or Renaissance or YPO or whatever. There are two books that you should read. This book, which is awesome, which is Leo's book. Buy these as a max set on Amazon. Yeah. Maybe. We better try to come up with some program, let people do that. But I called it Critical Mass, the 10 Explosive Powers of CEO Peer Groups. And this is written based on my experience as a member of Bob's group. And there are 10 examples for each one, for each power. And they were examples that came from, you know, we always have to change the names and change it up a little bit because everything we do is confidential. And frankly, some of these examples are me at Delphi, right? But the kind of what I realized is that people can't really understand what goes on in a peer group because we don't really talk about it. It's confidential. It's hard to relay the stories. You almost have to experience it, right, Leo? I mean, it's powerful to get in the room, and you, when you have the right people in the room, they pretty quickly get it's a different place than any place they've been before. It's not a networking group, and it's not an industry trade association, which are all great. You should be in those things
absolutely
too. And I write about that in the book. But you know, the one of the base start first level powers is just a safe haven. It's so hard for a CEO or business owner to be able to say, I don't really know what the right idea decision is right here. The people that work around you aren't real comfortable if you say that frequently to them, because they sort of expect you to be clairvoyant and have the answers. So when this book came out, I was really excited because I was able to take my experience as a member and relate it to people who maybe hadn't experienced what a peer group would be like. And that led me to an interview with a lady named Deborah Sweet, Leadership Talk Radio in San Diego. And she interviewed me about the book. And I was, after it was over, I felt, I never met her, right? I met her like this. And I thought, I really like her. And she gave me a chance to talk about my book. And I thought, the second thought that went through my head was, I'd like people to feel that way about me, right? That's good karma. Mm-hmm. So I thought, I'm going to start a radio show. When I was raising my children, who are now millennials and, you know, off on their own, I would tell them, learn everything you can when life gives it to you, because you never know later in life when you might need that knowledge. In college, I went to school to be a disc jockey. I thought I was going to be a radio show disc jockey. And then I chose a different path, business and sales and things. And the idea of being a podcast radio show host didn't intimidate me because I had done it in college. And so a month later, after she interviewed me about my book, I was interviewing my public relations guy on my first podcast in March of 2009. And we've been doing a show every week, at least one show ever since. And it's been a great way to take what is confidential in a peer setting and take some of the sensitivity out of it, but still talk about transferable knowledge. Because I think like 80% of business is common. You know, a lot of business owners think, oh, if you're not in my industry, you'll never understand me. Let me tell you, after 10 years, that couldn't be further from the truth.
Sure. No question.
So much to share.
You brought up something that, you know, kind of makes me want to pick your brain a little bit on something, and that is regard to this whole notion of a safe haven. Most people, as you know, don't have a place in their lives where they can sit around with other people and truly be themselves and not always be putting their best face forward and, you know, talking about how everything's great and their numbers are amazing and all life is just fabulous all across the board, right? But a couple things I'm going to share with you briefly, and some of which we have talked about offline. I've been doing a workshop this year with CEO groups and small business owner groups and key executive groups across the country. And it's essentially an assessment of their group based on the five factors, which we identify as five factors that are common to high performing groups. One of them is this idea that is a safe and confidential environment. When I ask members of these groups to rate their safe and confidential environment on a scale of 1 to 10, everybody's about a 9.5. I mean, there is super high. I mean, if not 10 or right 9 to 10, whatever the group says. So after about 10 of these workshops, I was getting this number so consistently. And yet, as the rest of the workshop went on, I was thinking to myself, the question I really need to ask is, continue to ask that question, is a safe environment? But then I ask, how well do you believe you take advantage of the safe environment? How well do you all really leverage this incredible place you have that you don't have anywhere else? That number then starts to drop down to about a 6, 6.5, because there's this belief that they know it's there, but they're not, or at least not everyone, is always all in when it comes to really sharing, you know, some of the things that they know. If they put out there, they know the group would help them. They know that the environment's safe to do it. It's going to be free of judgment. There's not going to be any of that stuff. But, you know, I'd love to know how you get your members to really be all in and really, you know, squeeze every ounce of value out of that safe environment that they have.
That's an excellent question. And no, really, because in my experience, over time, people take advantage of it less and less. New members, because like Vistage and the other groups, sure, we ask them to bring something to process. Come and actually use the group the way it's intended to be used. And I find new members are the most used, ones that use that the most. Over time, what I find is it gets harder and harder to get members to bring topics to the table, because either they feel, well, you know, it's really not that big of an issue and I don't want to, you know, burden everybody with it, or I'm going to talk offline to a couple of the other members and I'll get the feedback that I'm looking for without you having to formally process the issue. And so one of the areas after 10 years in this industry, and one of the things that I'm asking my peer group to help me with, because we are meeting in November in Las Vegas for our quarterly meeting, is I need different issue processing techniques. I feel like I'm a little bit maybe getting stale because I have a couple that I like to use. And I think because of that, they've seen this play before. And I need to find new ways to sort of spice it up a little bit because, you know, like your organization did, and Vistage did in the past and others, when you get a member, they can stay a long time with you. I have members from my first year that are still with me because of the fact that it's so unique and different. But there is an element of it that can get a little bit tiring, not in a bad way, but sort of like, yeah, I'm going to do it on my own, because naturally within any group, they kind of find a couple of the members that they resonate even more with, and maybe they use them as their advisors more than the whole group.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. You know, so when you mentioned about they can be members a long time, one of the groups that I met with in Missouri, actually, the group had been around for 18 years, and several of the founding members were still members of the group.
Wow, that's awesome.
Now you would think that after 18 years, this group is firing on all cylinders. But back to the matter is, everything from taking certain things for granted, to new members coming in, to dynamic shifting and changing and all of that, that, you know, keeping that whole idea of the safe and confidential environment and always keeping it present, always being mindful of it and never, ever taking it for granted, number one. And also, you know, you find too, where those people who are real sharers, you know, they're consistently really putting it out on the table and doing that. Well, after a while, although they like that and get the benefit and value from it, if they see other people not quite sharing in the same way, then that starts to get people to pull back. And it's you know, it really shows, quite frankly, that for the leader of these groups, this is it's a delicate dance in many respects. If you really want to have a group over time, you know, really have its A game for every single meeting, it's a great deal of work and requires a great deal of attention, I think.
Well, I adopted the Vistage model of meeting with my members once a month. Renaissance model is once a quarter, but I saw value in meeting with them once a month, and I thought I'd deliver a higher level of service and whatever. Yep. And a lot of the work that I do in those meetings is to try to bring forth topics that encouraging the members to bring to the group. Because I'm not the answer man. That's what I love about this system is I don't have to, I read about that in my book. I don't have to have all this. I don't have all this knowledge. I have just a certain set of knowledge. Bring it to the group and let them. One thing I did want to mention, 40% of the members that I have in Southern California, because I have LA and Orange County now, are female entrepreneurs and business owners.
Oh,
and
great.
And I have found that until I introduce at least one woman business owner in that group, it's harder to get the guys to be as transparent as I know they want to be. But as soon as I have a diverse group, one of the elements of diversity is gender.
Yep.
It's amazing how once they see one person being willing to go to a level of vulnerability and how the group responded, then the other little more careful people will move closer to that edge as well.
Hey, I want to move a little bit to your new book coming up.
Okay.
And you know, I love the title. Killing Cats Leads to Rats. I know that it speaks to a very specific story, but at the same time, it speaks to, you know, so much of what goes on in business and so many, you know, various challenges that I'm sure are challenges that over the 10 years you've been leading groups, you see time and time again. So tell us a little bit about the book, kind of what inspired the particular title. I know there was the story, but you have many, many stories in this book, and yet this one seemed to come to the surface. It seemed to serve as the metaphor for the concept for you here, and would love to have you tell our listeners all about this new book, because I think it's really exciting.
Thank you. The book will be out in January to February of 2018.
Nice.
My publisher has the manuscript now, and if I could, this is the working book. Designed a little hard to read, but Killing Cats Leads to Rats. And I've been giving this as a talk for 6 years. I'm through the radio show, I was fascinated, and in the peer group, how often the outcome of a strategic decision that a business owner made was different than the intended outcome. And I thought, why does this happen? And then what can I learn that might help them to mitigate that? Because my belief is, and I write about this in the book, my book is built on research done by Dr. Robert K. Merton.
Right.
He's the father of modern sociology. He coined the term unanticipated consequences, which over time has moved to unintended consequences, although there's a slight difference, but same idea. And he found the causes and the outcomes. And there are three unintended causes, outcomes. One's a negative outcome. It's different than what you expected, and it's bad. The other one he called the snowball effect. It's a little more subtle. It's not what you expected, but it sows the seeds for problems for you later on. So, you know, it's a little harder to detect. And the third one is a positive outcome. It's better than what you had expected. He called it serendipity, right? Like maybe luck. And my advice to business owners is, even when you have a more positive outcome than what you had told your employees, you need to be careful that your employees feel that that was a good thing, because many times they expect the boss to be clairvoyant. If you say, if I do this, boss, we're going to get this outcome, and I do this and we get a different outcome, make sure that one of your employees isn't sitting at the bench on a Saturday morning working to fill these extra orders that you got, missing her son or daughter's soccer game, thinking, why didn't Leo know that this thing was going to be so popular and have us build up in advance? And oh, by the way, why isn't Leo here right now? Right? I'm here. And so even when things are working well for you, walk the four corners of your business to make sure that everybody is as happy about the serendipitous outcome as what you thought. And so when I saw Dr. Merton's work, and he wrote a paper in 1936 on purposeful action, and he studied large-scale social systems. And I thought, well, what's a company but a social system, right? It's people who are doing things to get an outcome. It's a society. And so his research can be applied to business, and that's good because it'll help them to see the causes of unintended consequences and the effects. But he didn't write about how to mitigate them, and especially in business. And so we came up with this idea of a decision ecosystem. And that's the environment that's around a CEO or a business owner that informs the decisions that they make. And our research shows, and okay, I'm a little biased, I get it, but it's factual, that in that ecosystem, to really make it robust, you need peer influence. You need outside perspective. You just can't do it all on your own. And so this decision ecosystem helps you to safeguard against unintended consequences because it addresses blind spots and groupthink, right? And sacred cows and all the rest of the stuff that happens in a business that causes you to miss until it's too late. And then the other thing that we've developed is a model called Secure. And we write about it in the book. It's the six steps that a CEO can take to try to anticipate the outcomes. And then if they start to happen, mitigate them. Because if you grab them early, you can reduce the damage on your company and the effects on employee morale. Because what I found is repeated unintended consequences in business really lower employee morale. And that's a very dangerous place to be, because then people stop trusting what you say to be true, because you were really wrong the last three times. Why should I do it this time? And that's a cancer that can really erode the performance of a company over time.
Well, you know, it doesn't surprise me at all in terms of the influence of peers in this process. Because just think about the number of group meetings you've led where someone brings something and they've thought it out really well, right? And they lay it all out there and they think they've got this thing nailed from soup to nuts. And now all of a sudden they're around with another people who are walking through this through different doors and seeing it through different lenses, are asking, hey, what about this? What about that? And, you know, and it is really enlightening and very illuminating for that member who thought they could sit in their office and knock this out, and they got it all figured out from A to Z. And the next thing you know, they find out there's many other letters to the alphabet they didn't know about. One of the, you know, I'll share this quickly because I think this is also very interesting. I won't name the firm, but it was a multinational communications firm essentially that did an amazing job of putting together multinational teams for clients. So the promise to the client was, if you've got a big project going on, we're going to find you the best person in the world to work on that project, whether they're in Chicago or they're in London or wherever it happens to be. And they're going to create these teams and they're going to work on your business. And they were really good at it. Here was the problem, and it was kind of interesting talking about unintended or unanticipated consequences, right? Was sometimes you can have systems, you can have things going on in your company that you don't think are related to something at all, and you find out they're really related. So for example, on one hand, they're trying to create these, you know, best-in-class multinational teams to support, you know, top client work. What started to happen was, because the offices had their own P&L, and when times got a little tough, now all of a sudden, if I'm managing this account out of my office in Chicago, for example, I'm thinking, huh, I could farm this out to the top guy in London, but my guy's good enough, and I get to keep the revenue, right? Because that's how I'm judged. So when things get squeezed, now all of a sudden this gets pulled back. Well, as you might imagine, over time, clients are going to notice when they get the number two, three, and four person versus the number one person, and they were losing business and big business as a result of who got what piece of the income as opposed to, I mean, it was crazy. And yet what they found out afterwards and what they eventually adjusted was they changed the model, obviously, for general managers of these offices when it came to that. And they weren't going to be penalized for doing what's right for the client, which is what the grand promise was to begin with of creating these teams. So it is very complex, and we need a lot of eyes and a lot of ears and a lot of people around us to help us see where things are connected and to make sure that what we're doing, you know, is doing what is intended, not unintended.
Yeah, one of the five causes of unintended consequences from Dr. Merton's work is basic interests, not understanding the interests of your employees. And that might be an example where, while it sounded great theoretically, in practice, my self-interests weren't being served by giving away this business, right? And so I'm going to hold on to it. And that's really common. And it really comes into effect when you have channel partners. because you might think this is in their best interest. An example that's in the book that's not a business example, but it is, but it isn't, is in 2009, the Washington, D.C. City Council decided that they had a real problem with people that were buying beers and drinking them on the street and then hanging out on the street. And so they passed an ordinance for this certain area, which was Ward 6, which is right around the Capitol, that the liquor stores couldn't sell single cans of beer. They figured that would, matter of fact, the Councilman Tommy Wells said, this is going to solve the problem, to call us the police, the disturbances, all going to go down because we've found the root cause and we've stopped it. What they didn't think about was that those single can beer sales were a high margin, important part of the liquor store's business. And so what the liquor stores in that region area did is they got together and they created a two pack because there was no law prohibiting just selling two cans of beer. And then what happened were the people that came in, instead of just one at a time, they'd gang up to come in and get two. Now all of a sudden they're standing around and drinking together. The problems got worse because the city council didn't realize they were taking a high margin sale away from the liquor store that they weren't going to give up.
Exactly. No. And it, you know, it's so funny. It's this is where, and even out of the politics of, when you think about certain business regulations and some of the unintended consequences that are produced there, or how private companies can get very innovative when it comes to figuring out how to work the system, if you will. So, right. You know, it's interesting. So, you know, one of the very cool things about this book, I thought too, was that you had Marshall Goldsmith write the foreword for you. So tell me a little bit about how you came to that and wanted Marshall to write that forward, and great.
So part of the Renaissance model is we go away for a weekend retreat. It's called Strategies for Success. And this year's content was built on Marshall's latest book, Triggers. And Jim Canfield, who was our CEO for Renaissance, knew Marshall because they had done the videos and put the work together. And I really found Triggers to be a powerful book. Yeah. So did my members. I delivered it in March of this year. It's now November. There are many people whose lives have been changed by the concepts that Marshall talks about in that book. So I would highly recommend Triggers to people who are looking to address behavioral issues and how you respond to stimulus in your environment and really gaining more control. And Marshall's the number one CEO coach in the world, right? I mean, it's just the stuff that he says are pearls that come out of his mouth. And so through Jim Canfield, I gave Jim my manuscript and I said, would you see if Marshall would be so kind as to read the book and maybe write an endorsement or even the foreword for it? And Marshall's an amazing, giving
person. He is a generous guy. He sure is.
And when he read my book, he had a very positive response to the stories and the learnings. And he said, I could do an endorsement, but if you want me to, I'd be happy to write the foreword. And I'm like, that is more than I could have asked for. Yes, please write the foreword. And so he did. And so I'm very honored to have his name on the front of my book, along with mine and his view of my book. But I've also been able to get the president of Vans Shoes to write an endorsement. Brian Smith, who brought UGG brands to the United States, who read my book and wrote an endorsement. Wing Lam, who's one of the brothers who started Wahoo's Fish Tacos, wrote an endorsement for my book. Michael Houlihan, who's with his business partner Bonnie Harvey, brought about Barefoot Wine and scaled it to be the largest wine producer in the country, wrote for an endorsement for my book. So it's been great to see these successful entrepreneurs who've read the book and go, yeah, this is transferable knowledge, and I'd like to support you, Rick. So I've been very honored by that.
Oh, that's exciting. You know, I know that, in addition to this book, you're also doing a lot of work and a lot of research around this notion of small to mid-sized companies and how they can really compete with larger organizations. So I would love for you to tell us a little bit about that, because, I think that's always fascinating. And for the, small to mid-sized company owners out there, they would certainly love to, get some pearls of wisdom around that.
Sure. I think our industry has a lot of lower middle market companies in it, whether you're a CEN client, a Vistage client, even YPL, and Renaissance, certainly, they tend to be, I don't know, you kind of buy employees or revenue, 100 million, 200 million, they're not necessarily the multi-billion dollar corporations that are in these peer groups. And what I was sensing over the 10 years is there's a little bit of size envy in the smaller companies, believing if I was just a little bigger, I'd be better. Things would be easier, like whatever. And that may be true, but I've seen enough counterexamples of that where bigger isn't better. Matter of fact, if you don't grow right, bigger is worse. Some companies have to retrench to a smaller size because they did something wrong in the growth. And the only way to fix it is to unwind the company back to a level that they can get it fixed and then hopefully regrow from that level.
Or they change to a mindset where they start protecting what they have instead of doing what got them to where they're being successful now, you know? Right. And I think that's a, you know, certainly a big thing as well.
And or they chase a shiny ball, or they overinvest in, or all revenue is good and I'm going to take any piece of business that I can get. And then all of a sudden they realize that the price quality is different and now their business is harder because their margins are thinner. And now you have more pressure on you because you have a less profitable business, which I think is a direct correlation to how much stress a president, CEO, business owner has. If you have a little more profit in the business, you can absorb a little bit of issues because it's kind of a shock absorber for you. So if you thin the margins down, you've created a real problem for yourself moving forward. So we have been studying for several years and listening through the radio show. I've done 1,200 interviews now on Critical Mass Radio Show and continue to, you know, do that. Looking for ways that companies could create smaller companies, $100 million and less. Too many great books have been written that are aspirationally good for small business, but they're not practical, I don't think. It's hard to implement some of these ideas that billion-dollar companies are implementing.
Sure.
So we agreed in the research team, $100 million and smaller, because a $100 million company, a $90 million company, you can be a 30, 20, 10, and you can probably do a lot of what they're doing and certainly grow into that size. So what we're looking for is companies that could create competitive advantage and scalable market differentiation. In other words, do something that creates a successful, profitable business and then be able to grow that and not lose the secret sauce that's inside that business. And we've been doing research looking for companies that have been in business for 5 years or more, who've had 3 years of successful growth, who've had 3 years of profitability. And we've come up with four kind of organizing strategies and then six tactics under each one that we're now vetting against a larger database to see if how these hold up to a larger sampling, because I believe companies that are smaller than their larger competitors have comparative advantage. But it's not only that we can respond more quickly or we're more customer intimate. Those are too thin of value propositions to scale. They work for a while, but they don't get you to where you want to be if you want to be a larger, you know, 80, 90, $100 million company, or even beyond that. So we're doing the research now. Next year is all about unintended consequences as far as getting the book out, but we're also going to be doing the research. And I told the publisher probably 2 years we'll be ready to publish, assuming the data holds for the critical mass company.
Well, I think this is all really exciting. As I mentioned, I think you were one of the, you know, the people early on who started writing about the power of peers and what they can mean, and the fact that who we surround ourselves with really matters a whole lot. And I think I've certainly been one of the evangelists for that for quite some time. And I think it's very exciting now that we've got this, you know, in addition to this constant of your radio show and the 1,200 interviews you've done, I think there's a next wave of content that's coming out, you know, beginning after the first of the year, that I assume will come out for many years after that I'm just really thrilled about. But before we run, I want you to at least make sure that our listeners know exactly where they can find you, find your radio show, find your book, find all of the content that you're working on right now. So if you could let our listeners know how they can learn about you, more about you and your work, that would be terrific.
You're awesome. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. So the radio show, it can be listened to as a podcast. Most of my audience, we get about 25,000 downloads a month now, the radio show podcast. iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, a bunch of other platforms. Just type in Critical Mass Radio Show into your podcasting software and the show will come up. And if you'd be so kind as to subscribe to it, I would be honored. And so that's the way. I can be found on my website is simply the name of my company, Critical Mass 4FOR business.com. And on it is all the stuff that I do with the peer groups, some white papers that we haven't talked about that I've done some research on groupthink and some other things, as well as the link for the podcast. You can go there as well. And I I'm hired to speak and talk on these subjects as well. And there's information on that. We have a YouTube channel with videos. And, you know, I just believe more and more people are wanting to learn from each other. I really think, Leo, we may be at a critical mass where the millennials and the other generations who are more collaborative by nature, we raise them to be that way. This idea of peer learning and who you surround yourself with, it's what we said growing up. Our parents told us, right? Hey, don't hang around with those kids because you might get in trouble because they're not the kind of kids I want you to hang. It's the same thing in business. Be around people who move you to the next level up. And what you write about in your book about who you surround yourself with, be so thoughtful about that, because that, like you said earlier, one idea that you hadn't thought of can either protect you from a blindside issue or open up a market. It's the breakthrough thinking that corporations spend billions of dollars on trying to figure out how to get it into their infrastructure. We can do it every month in these peer groups.
That's exactly right. Hey, well, look, it's wonderful to have you on the show. Thanks for, I think, underscoring this point that we learn better when we learn together. And awesome. Again, you have a great weekend, and we'll connect real soon, I hope.
Thank you, my friend. I've you enjoyed bet. This tremendously.
Thanks.
Thanks for joining us today. To learn more about Peer Advantage, to submit questions to Leo and our guest, and to subscribe to the Year of the Peer podcast, please visit us at leobattari.com. That's leobottari.com. This podcast is produced by me, Randy Cantrell, hosted, of course, by Leo Battari. Music provided by Kevin McLeod, Vibe Ace. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license.